KOWO Radio 104.1 FM would like to welcome you to Windows into Wimberley. Each week, Erica Clapp is joined by a guest to discuss the things that are happening in and around your town. These conversations are designed to provide the community with insight and information on a wide range of topics that are specific to the Wimberley area. Now it's time to look through the windows into Wimberley.
Welcome to this week's episode of Windows into Wimberley. I'm your host, Erica Clapp. And this week, my guest is Ryan McGillicuddy with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. Welcome, Ryan. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
So, Ryan, can you tell me a little bit more about your specific role with the Parks and Wildlife Department?
I'm a conservation ecologist with Texas Parks and Wildlife, and I work in the Inland Fisheries Division. And part of my job is to provide technical guidance to streamside landowners in the Blanco River watershed, to encourage them to implement streamside best management practices, which benefit the in-stream habitat and the overall health of the river.
Okay, awesome. I'm here today to speak with you specifically about your Healthy Creeks Initiative. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that means?
Sure. The Healthy Creeks Initiative is an effort by Texas Parks and Wildlife with a lot of other local partners, including the Hill Country Alliance, the Nature Conservancy, the City of Fredericksburg, etc. And it's an effort to manage an invasive species known as Arundo donax. We call it Arundo for short, but it's also known by a couple other common names such as giant reed or carrizo cane or river cane. And this is a invasive species that looks kind of like bamboo or giant stalks of corn, but it rapidly has been colonizing new areas of the streamside. So we're trying to work with landowners to get a handle on it and treat it and manage it to prevent it from spreading any further.
So it's an invasive species. That means it is something that's not native to Texas?
Correct.
Is that okay?
Yeah. It's originally from the, we believe this strain of that is originally from the Mediterranean area.
Okay. What damage is it causing to specifically the Blanco watershed?
So the effects of this rapidly growing grass, it's a grass species, even though it looks kind of like woody and fibrous. It is in the grass family. And what it does is it rapidly colonizes new areas and displaces native vegetation. So it can create these big, large monocultures where it's the only species present. So it displaces native vegetation. And native streamside vegetation has really deep roots. And so those roots help to hold the soil together. And so when you get flooding events, things like that, those roots act to like reinforce the banks and prevent erosion. So the roots of Arundo are not quite as deep. They're really strong and create like a big, thick, dense mat, but they don't go very deep like native roots do. So what can happen is the erosive forces of the water undercut and go underneath the roots, and it can kind of slump in and create less stable riverbanks. In the Blanco specifically, we already have a lot of problems with erosion due to the flood in 2015, so it's a big concern. It also is fire prone, so when the stalks dry out, they can increase the risk of wildfire. It's also known to harbor various different pests. So it's something that we're trying to get a handle on, but really it's that it's you know, that we like a diversity of native species along our riverbanks, and it reduces that diversity in favor of this monoculture.
I was reading something on one of the pieces of information that I had found on your website, saying that it also could impact our state fish, which is the Guadalupe bass. Is that correct? How does that impact?
So what we like in these streamside areas, we call them riparian areas, is the term for that. And a riparian zone is this special ecological zone between the wetted edge of the river, where it is, and between the uplands. And they're these special corridors that require special care. And riparian zones, one of their functions is to create those stable riverbanks. But what happens in these areas on land next to the river also affects the in-stream habitat. So the diversity of species will contribute wood, leafy debris, things like that, but also shade. So it cools the river. It also filters the water as water passes over land on its way to the river. These healthy riparian zones with a diverse array of native species, native vegetation, trees, grasses, filters the water and cleans it. Also, the bugs that grow and have their life cycle in the river are also dependent upon a healthy, diverse array of vegetation on the stream banks. Their life cycles interact from land to water. So you need these diverse array of species to create an in-stream habitat that's suitable for a species like Guadalupe bat.
You mentioned treatment. So what are some of the ways that you guys are helping landowners with this treatment?
So the Healthy Creeks Initiative is a no-cost, voluntary program that landowners can enroll in. So the state legislature, recognizing the impact of invasive species on our economy, which is in the hundreds of billions of dollars, I believe it's about $140 billion per year is the estimated impact of aquatic invasive species. So in recognition of that, the legislature granted Texas Parks and Wildlife, part of our budget is to $45 million annually is the estimated amount of money that it would take to actually combat the invasive species problem. So we get a small portion of that, and we've focused a bit of our budget, our aquatic invasive species budget, on targeting Arundo. And what that does is it gives us voluntary enrollment at no cost to the landowner. So they sign up for this program, and we come out and treat it once a year in the summer
month. Why during the summer month?
That is when the herbicide that we use is most effective at being absorbed by the plant, and when it's growing and taking in those nutrients. So it's best to treat this when it's hot. So July, August, September is when we try and target it and get out.
Okay. What are some ways, let's say I go out to my yard and I see this growing and I don't have that herbicide or I have not enrolled mm-hmm. with you. What are some ways that I can take care of it on my own?
So the most important thing to recognize in treating this plant is that it spreads by vegetative fragmentation primarily. It does produce seeds, but they're not really that viable. The way this plant gets around and spreads and colonizes new areas is breaking apart, drifting downstream, and settling and creating a new colony. So even a small piece that's just an inch or two long of this plant can colonize a new area, which means that if you mow it, cut it, till it, that type of thing, you're creating thousands of little new potential plants that can drift downstream and colonize. That's why it's so successful as an invasive species. So one of the most important things to recognize is that treating it mechanically through some of those methods, like digging it up or mowing it, can actually cause the problem to get worse and distribute it even further. So we found, for our methods, that herbicide treatment is definitely the most important or most effective way to treat it. You can remove it mechanically by kind of digging it out under its roots and being very careful to not distribute any fragments. But the downside of that is that you're also kind of digging into the soil and loosening it and disturbing it. So we found the herbicide treatment to be the most effective way. If you're interested in treating this, but not participating necessarily in our program for one reason or another, or maybe you're outside of our target areas and we can't offer you that assistance, then what you should do is contact Texas Parks and Wildlife to get a treatment proposal, because there are some controls and regulations on how it can be treated. And so you can visit our website too, which I'm sure we'll give the information out for that.
Absolutely.
And there's information about DIY, do-it-yourself Arundo treatment. So we do have that information available to landowners as well.
Okay, that's great. So why don't you go ahead and give us that website? Sorry, I caught you while you were drinking
your
tea.
Sure, no, you're good. It's on the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's main website, which is tpwd.texas.gov/healthycreeks, all one word. So tpwd.texas.gov/healthycreeks.
You were telling me also that you have this program is not just in the Wimberley area for the Blanco watershed. It's the Medina and Pernales.
Yep, Medina, Pernales, Guadalupe, and Blanco River watershed landowners are all eligible to participate in this program. And so, our priorities are along the main stems of those rivers. But, this plant spreads from the top down, typically. So, we're concerned about those headwater areas as well. So if you're on a tributary of one of those rivers. So, you know, let's say Cypress Creek and Wimberley, or Lone Man Creek in Wimberley, you know, you are eligible to participate in this program if you notice Arundo on your property. And the same goes for, you know, one of the areas that we're treating in Fredericksburg that we're most focused on is actually Barron's Creek, which runs through the town. We're targeting that area even more than the Pedernales River main stem itself because the problem is so concentrated there.
Okay.
So we're trying to approach this on a watershed scale in each of those four watershed. Kind of reiterate how the issue specifically is impacting the Blanco River in the Wimberley area. Because remember that I mentioned that this plant, Arundo donax, is distributed by vegetative fragmentation. It also likes to colonize disturbed areas, so areas that have vegetation removed, so that are mowed frequently or have excessive grazing and herbivory by maybe deer. Or cattle, it can come in and colonize these areas because it likes disturbance. You know, it likes areas where the vegetation has been removed. So what we had in 2015 with the Blanco River flood, with the Memorial Day floods, and then subsequently the Halloween floods, were a massive amount of disturbance that created erosion and removed vegetation. But because this plant also spreads by vegetative fragmentation, the river, when it rose so violently, broke apart the existing stands of Arundo and just widely distributed it to new areas with new habitat available for it. So after the 2015 flood, we saw a massive new distribution of this plant to areas that had not historically been colonized with it. So our effort right now is really to get a handle on it before it spreads, because it is spreading rapidly since 2015. We've got 100 to 110 now landowner participants. So over 100 people have signed up for this program, and it's increasing year by year. I think we had 60 the first year, and the neighbors saw how effective it was, and the landowners have been spreading the word. So our landowners are one of our biggest assets in this program as far as getting the word out about this, you know, no cost, very effective treatment. And then, you know, really what we're encouraging people to do after it's been treated is leave the cane for at least 2 years to make sure that it's not actually viable anymore. Because remember, if you cut it, mow it down, then it can still spread. So we're encouraging people to leave the dead cane standing for a couple years, and if it resprouts, you know, which we've seen in some areas, sometimes it takes a couple seasons to treat it before it's totally 100% effective, and then we'll come back and treat it the next year. And and we're seeing an incredible amount of effectiveness on it. The plants that we've been treating, you know, since 2016, so this is our third treatment year. You know, a lot of them are almost completely eradicated in certain locations. So we don't call it eradication. You know, we call it management, because these things do take continuous management. So. Those dead cane will also act as cages for new plants to grow inside of. Their roots do still provide some stability even after they've died, so it's important to leave that cane there. But if you're interested in the program, you can visit that website, but we also have a email address that you can send inquiries to, and that's healthycreeks@tpwd.texas.gov.
So you mentioned, you know, that the legislator noticed the how it was affecting the economy, mm-hmm. These invasive species. What are some ways that you can give me as examples of that, of how it affects the economy?
You know, I mean, it affects it through a variety of different ways, depending on what the species is. And, you know, to be honest, our aquatic invasive species team lead would be able to tell you more specifics about those studies. But I mean, it impacts it through water usage, through wildfire, you know, all the resources that have to go into controlling this. A lot of that number from aquatic invasives includes species such as water hyacinth and giant salvinia, salt cedar that colonize, and those first two are in-stream aquatic invasives that colonize lakes and rivers. Hydrilla, a lot of these displace. Can impact boating ramps and things like that. So, and require a lot of active management across the state. So that number is, heavily impacted by a lot of those other species. Parsing out how much specifically the impact of Arundo is and putting a dollar value on that, I'm sure it's been done. I don't have the number in front of me, but.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I think you can probably make the argument that, you know, if you're utilizing your land for farming or grazing or mm-hmm. recreation or whatever, that these plants displace, you know, a lot of the native vegetation that's so beneficial. So
okay.
there's probably a way you can quantify that.
Okay. I think that's all the questions that I have for you today. Is there anything else you would like to touch on before we sign off for the day?
Sure, yeah. You know, part of my job is not just, you know, working to help manage this species, but encouraging landowners to implement streamside best management practices in general. And so this is just one component of that. So, you know, I mentioned the value of these riparian areas in creating, you know, healthy ecosystems. And, you know, there's a lot of services that that having a diverse array of riparian native vegetation along your riverbank provides you a lot of value and a lot of services, including, you know, they're more resilient to the effects of flooding, so they recover quicker. They hold the ground together better by the native, by their deep roots. But, and, you know, they provide that water quality function that we mentioned. But another thing that they do is they slow down water and allow it to infiltrate into the soil instead of just running off over the ground. And so what they do, these healthy riparian areas, is they store water in the banks and provide water like a time release capsule to the river, you know, year round. So we can actually increase the quantity of water in our streams by having more resilient, more diverse, lush riparian vegetation along our stream front. And it's not incompatible with maintaining access along your river. So we're trying to encourage folks in the Wimberley area and the Blanco River and along rivers in Texas at large to, you know, create targeted access points where you have your moat area where the kids can play and where you get into the river, you know, 20 feet to 30 feet of riverbank, and then have areas that are, you know, allow it to grow up in native vegetation, and then maybe have another area downstream that has, you know, another access. So we're encouraging people to, you know, accommodate both the natural processes and your use and enjoyment along certain other mode areas. So you can have the best of both worlds.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and they just, you know, those native plants, they're what are adapted to that region. They don't need a lot of maintenance, and they provide a lot of services back to you, both, you know, from an ecosystem service, but also from a landowner perspective of holding your bank together and, you know, keeping that water clean and keeping it in the river. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you, Erica. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Windows into Wimberley. As always, we're here to discuss the things that are happening in and around your town. If there's something happening you'd like to know more about, or if you have topics or suggestions for the show, please contact KOWO General Manager Ryan Hsu at 512-965-9969. Join Erica Clapp on KOWO 104.1 FM next time for another look inside the Windows into Wimberley.